This is the Adult Swim Podcast. I'm Matt Harrigan. I'm at Stupid Buddy Studios in Burbank, California, home of Robot Chicken. We've been talking to the cast and crew, all the people who make the show. Today, writer Hugh Davidson. He's written for a lot of crazy shows. He's going to tell us all about it. Being with Mike Tyson sets a different tone.
It really does.
Yeah, than being with Mike Lazo.
But they're both potent figures.
What are they? What are their similarities? They're potent.
Idiosyncratic.
Yeah.
Kind of signature people.
Yeah.
You kind of think they're one. You kind of want to think they're one thing.
Yeah.
And then there's going to be something that is confusing. An element that doesn't square with other parts. And then you're like, what? And then you're just confused.
What was your first run-in with Mike Tyson?
Horrendous. I'm shocked you weren't at this. It was when we – because someone – you didn't go to that thing. The thing where we shot at his house?
No, I didn't go to that.
Somebody went. Could that have been Walter? Maybe it was Walter.
Maybe, yeah.
That's when we got – this is the first time – we get there at 5 in the morning to shoot.
Why do you get there at 5 in the morning?
Because we were at a cartoon that's barely a cartoon that was then wanting to shoot live action, and of course we're incompetent at it. And then we arrive there with – and I've written massive monologues for Mike Tyson, like soliloquies, not having any idea he's not going to be able to do these.
Right.
And we get there. It's 105 degrees at 5:15 in the morning. It's dark and it's 105 degrees.
And this is in Las Vegas?
Las Vegas at his home.
Uh-huh.
We're going to shoot exterior. We're going to shoot him outside wearing that sweatsuit is the plan and have him say a bunch of stuff that will bookend the show.
The show was supposed to originally have live action wraparounds?
Yes. Kind of like Fat Albert.
Fat Albert. Oh.
And everyone just assumed Mike Tyson can do this. So then we get there. The wife answers the door.
At 5 in the morning.
5 in the morning. Very angry.
Are you nervous about ringing Mike Tyson's doorbell at 5 in the morning?
Yes, because it just looks like a fucking house.
Why are you there at 5?
And why is there not someone opening the door and meeting us? Like nothing. It's just like approaching a house.
Yeah.
And she answers the door. She's very angry with Mike, who she says has last night betrayed her trust, and he was in the clubs doing Lord knows what. And she's very, very upset. And that was the beginning of the day. It was something.
That's 5 a.m.
That's 5 a.m.
Wow.
And we shot all day. That was also, he was sweating so much. And then I watched this local makeup artist take men's Mitchum antiperspirant deodorant and rub it on his forehead. And then we said action. Like to prevent sweating, she used underarm deodorant.
I met you, I think, in 2008 when we were shooting Young Person's Guide to History. Maybe just before that when you were doing Saul of the Mole Men.
Yeah. God, I love Saul of the Mole Men.
Yeah. Good old days.
Yeah. That was the best.
Saul?
Saul was the best because I felt like I was just a writer.
Yeah. You were a writer on that show.
I was just a writer.
Uh-huh. I had hired gun.
I had, ironically, auditioned for the role of Saul like a year before.
Mm-hmm.
And I believed I had gotten the part. Craig, the creator, told me flat out, I was his. He's like, you're it. And then it said it had to go to network for approval.
Whoa.
Well, then I didn't get it because I guess Lazo thought I was not the character. Like they wanted it to be like a schmo, a guy who's like a dope. And
you
then
were
Josh
kind of a cool guy.
I'm not a cool guy.
You're kind of a cool guy.
I'm a crazy guy. And then so it was frustrating. And then I was on the writing staff and Josh Gardner was him. And I love Josh. Josh makes me laugh, but Josh is crazy. And the writing of that was the funnest thing in the world. It was like, that to me reminded me of like the same experience when you're doing something and it's crazy and underfunded, which you guys must have, the whole of a beginning of Adult Swim from what I've read was you guys' experience.
Yeah, crazy and seemed, underfunded.
Yeah, yeah. But it was cool. It was like it seemed you at least thought this is cool and fun to do.
You're here in this building, Stupid yes. Buddies, because your first writing job was on Robot Chicken.
Yes.
They brought you back for the special that they're writing now.
Yes.
And tell us how you got involved with Robot Chicken.
Seth had been in those Mike Myers movies, the spy.
Austin Powers
uh-huh. movies. And the Frau Farbissina is an actress, Mindy Sterling. Mindy was like a teacher at Growlings and was in the main company when I first started at Growlings. Growlings Improv, local L.A. theater. And she evidently, Seth was putting together, the writing staff. And she said, oh, I think Growlings people would, I guess, she said, they'd be good for this. It's sketch and they do sketch. And so Seth came to see a show, an improv show, and I was in it. Coincidentally, Eddie Izzard was in that show. But the show was very funny, probably because Eddie Izzard. And then Seth came up to me afterwards and he was like, oh, would you come in and interview? And I was I was very excited. I did at the time think I'm going to be an actor. I had no thought of being a writer, weirdly.
But as an improv person, you write for yourself.
Yes, and even at Growlings, you write your own sketches. So you're like, you are grooming yourself at the worst to be a sketch writer. But I came in, so I had a packet of sketches, and I gave them. And then I remember very vividly, Doug Goldstein, who's one of the head writers at the time, now and still is, I guess, or I don't know what he is, his official title. Doug, he's very blunt, and you'd say he's impolitic. But he said after reading one of my sketches, this is not funny at all, which seemed unnecessary.
He could have said it's very funny, but we're not hiring.
Right. And instead, but worse, he said it's not funny at all, and then they hired me. It made no sense.
A mixed message.
Yes. But it was one of the sketches I had done at Growlings, and it would do great every weekend.
What
at
was
Growlings.
It?
So it was about, ironically, even though this is like 20 years ago, it was about John Bolton, who is currently the National Security Advisor?
What, so 20 years ago, you were writing John Bolton sketches.
John Bolton sketch, because he was in the UN. He was appointed to the UN by Bush. Bush, the son.
Wow. That was a niche.
Yes.
Comedy piece.
But no one knew who he was, but he had these hilarious quotes where he said he wanted to bomb the UN. He was very funny, he seemed to me. He seemed like a funny guy. Now he's, no. He's...
Not so much in the big scheme.
Now it's not as funny anymore, people think.
So you wrote a John Bolton sketch.
Mm-hmm.
Doug Goldstein said it was terrible.
Yes.
But they hired you.
They hired me. And
that's
then I think...
very like a dream. Like
yes.
A weird...
And then I struggled
at
first with the shortness of sketches, the brevity that they were going for.
You wrote long.
I'm a dully paced fellow. And I think even at like Growlings, people think I go too slow. So like, let alone on a show that prides itself on like these 10-second things, it seemed like a bad match. But I think I was different, and they found a way to make it so my sketches would get in. And I think they because they're a little bit on the different side, and I don't know shit about pop culture. I'm older, crucially older than Matt and Seth, and my touchstones and memories are not quite theirs. I was like, I feel like. None of the toys they were into, none of the movies really. I had just been a little bit too old.
So you were writing long-winded, unfunny sketches about obscure political figures.
Yes, yeah.
And knew nothing about the references that they were.
Right. So I should have been a Robot Chicken failure, but for some reason I don't know what the hell it is.
What do you think it was?
I don't know. I think I make Tom laugh, and Tom helped me figure out how to get my sketches to work on the show.
Do you remember your first sketch that got in?
Yeah, it was a song, and that's another thing. I don't sing at all, but for some reason I've written like four songs on Robot Chicken. But the song it was about that legend, urban legend in New York, where like if a person falls and gets trapped between the subway and the subway platform. And then their body is like somehow mushed, and then they're alive fully because it creates some fantasy tourniquet,
yep.
And they're perfectly fine.
Yeah.
And then, but if they pull the train away, instant death.
Instant death.
So then I just had my guy stay there.
Yeah.
And he lived out the rest of a long life, and then he had a long happy life. But also my added thing was he didn't like his job. So even though he should have had a different attitude.
That seems disconnected from the Transformers and
yes,
Smurfs. And...
Yes, yeah. So that's my kind of thing. And the worst part of it is all those songs that I've written for them, because I at some point had to email them, iPhones are so, dastardly, they're in my iTunes. So occasionally in my car, if I press shuffle, I can hear my own stupid voice singing a song on Robot Chicken.
Wow.
Every once in a while, like one in 300 songs.
And those songs made it onto the show.
They did. That one did. And one about Petroleum Pete. I played a dinosaur. People want to know how it works. Like how the stop motion part is actually so fantastic. It's like eye candy to me. I so get it. Its appeal, because there's something magical about watching these stupid dolls. And I like even I had written a sketch for Star Wars, and it was about the Wampa.
Yeah.
And it was like Luke pulls into a gas station in his X-Wing fighter. I decided there were gas stations. And then like the Wampa's there, and the Wampa's like he's having a shitty life ever since his arm was cut off. And like he parks on the wrong side of the thing. The gas tank is on the run. He's like, ah. And then he drives around to the other side, and then he like drops his keys, and he has trouble with the gas because he has one arm. It's all so hard. His life is so hard. And Luke is just watching it, and he feels so bad about what happened. And that Chris McKay directed that one, I think.
Are you a Star Wars fan?
Eh. I like Star Wars.
Is there peer pressure here to like Star Wars?
There is. And certainly to know what the fuck you're talking
about.
Yeah.
Do you know the names of all the little animals and shit?
No, I was good through Empire Strikes Back. But even the third one, I was like, they seemed so stupid, the Ewoks. I was like, oh, you lost the plot. I loved the first two, though. But then there's like six more. Now there's all these other fucking things, these other things.
You have to, do you pretend to like Star Wars and to care about it?
No, I think what ended up happening, thank God, is there was no hiding my ignorance. They, the Robot Chicken guys, have decided to think it's funny that I don't know stuff. And so now it's at least all cards are on the table. And they just laugh. So now it's like I'm the old man who doesn't know what he's, he doesn't know anything.
What are your go-to references now? Being the old man on the staff.
Jesus. Like, they don't work at all. None of it works. I don't have any.
John Bolton was very prescient.
Yeah. Yeah, and that did come back. You know, he did occupy space in the public sphere later on in life. But, you know, I'm always either way ahead of my time in a useless way, or it's something they just don't get. They're like, what is this? We don't have no reason for this.
So you started on the show at the beginning of the show?
Yes.
And then you were there for how long?
Well, it was unclear to me how they really worked. I think I was in the early days. To me, I was like a Robot Chicken regular writer. In point of fact, I think they hired lots of people in between. I would work for like 6 weeks a year, and then another year would pass, and I'd get invited back to Robot Chicken and do another 6 weeks.
So you get invited in, and do you feel like you'd have to prepare, get yourself up to date with?
Not really, because I found a technique that worked for me.
What was that?
Matt and Seth, in their desperation to fill the shows with the garbage that they put in the shows, they would have a dry erase board. And on this dry erase board would be all these stupid titles of movies, pop culture crap, and toys that they loved. So I could sit there and look at the list, look it up, go straight to Wikipedia, find out what it was. And like if actually there's a sort of interesting story.
So how long were you there before you bailed?
On Robot Chicken?
Yeah.
I think I would always do Robot Chicken. I did the Star Wars specials.
Mm.
I did the DC specials. Another song I did, a Batman song.
In DC? In the DC special?
Yeah.
What was the song?
It was called Sailing. I just thought it was funny because Green Lantern, he would like, if they went into space, Green Lantern would always like have to do his ring for Batman and the people that couldn't travel in space. And it looked so embarrassing. Like they're... The way they got to the interstellar battle was embarrassing, and I thought that. So my idea for the sketch was Batman talk to him about a different vehicle. Could he choose a different vehicle than just the sphere, the green sphere? And he chose a sailboat. And then I tried to write a kind of yacht rocky song that was about sailing, and he just was in a relaxed mood.
So you didn't really bail. You just
no. I do it whenever I can.
Whenever you could. Weren't doing something.
Yes.
And then what came next? You stumbled into...
Mike Tice. No, I guess... So then after...
This is all before Saul?
No, Saul is after Robot Chicken, maybe the first or second writing job of Robot Chicken. Cycle, they call them here. Where, like you work for like 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Then I wrote on Saul. Then I acted on Saul when we shot it. I played one of the people in the suit, in the outfits.
Listen, man, I was in one of those outfits for about 3 hours.
It's something else, wasn't it?
It was terrible.
Yeah, I was in it the whole time. But I was like, I was having such a fun time. And I really thought it was like, could potentially be something. Then when we would get the scripts, I kind of thought like, I think we blew it.
But with the scripts?
Yeah.
Why?
There was too much too much story that no one cared about. Too much plot that you had to kind of follow. Mm-hmm. And then you weren't really following it. Like, it didn't stay simple enough, I think. I think it got too fucking crazy.
It's collapsed on itself?
Yeah, I think so. But I had such a fun time acting in it. It was very fun. And then
what did you play?
I played a bunch. I played Bertram, who was like a guy, a mole man. So I was in that big suit with the face. Oh, and by the way, at this point in time, I believe in Hollywood, proper Hollywood. They have things called fat suits. Mm-hmm. Well, our production did not. We had a thing called a beanbag chair, which was like taped to me to create a fat suit.
Wow. DIY.
Yeah, it was like worse, though.
That's a low-budget fat
suit. It really was. And then I played a guy named Nathaniel Baltimore, which was just like a mustache guy. I don't remember what he was about. And then I played Thomas Jefferson. And then supposedly Mike Lazo liked that. And it came back to me. I heard that the Adult Swim brass, of which you might have been a part, they were like, that's the show.
That's the show.
Yeah, the Thomas Jefferson part. So then I thought, oh, my God, I'm finally being recognized. I'm going to be the star of this spinoff. And I thought, this will work so well. And then that proceeded to be just like a car wreck.
Young Person's Guide to History.
Yeah.
Have you watched it lately?
I watched a little bit of one because I had to put together a reel for something, an acting reel, like 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I watched a little bit of it. And I found parts of it amusing. Mm-hmm. But not the whole. It seemed like a way worse version than Drunk History. It's like two people wanted to do a thing about history, and one person did it in a funny way, and we did it in an unfunny way.
Well, you know that you played the role of Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah.
That completely inspired Hamilton.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
No, he's been on the record.
Lin-Manuel?
Yeah.
Wow.
He saw that show.
And he was like, there's a...
I have an idea.
There's a spark here. They've just missed it.
They've just missed it, but there's something here.
It's like that band there's a band that recorded the song So Much Like Stairway to Heaven.
Right.
And they're mad, and then they're... But it's like, but you missed it,
right,
guys.
We could sue them.
Yeah. Let's sue Lin-Manuel around.
That was Young Person's Guide to History, I remember, started out as a longer series of episodes that got condensed down to two.
Yes. One would say almost punitively.
Distilled. Yeah, punitively.
I wish you could read my scripts from that era, though. I think you would like them.
A lot of interesting people in those episodes.
Yeah, yeah. Will Forte did a bit.
Mm-hmm. Will Forte.
Mike Hitchcock did a bit.
Yep.
Because I knew all those Groundlings people. And
Michaela Watkins.
Michaela was in it. Mm-hmm. Edie Patterson, who's on Righteous Gemstones now, she was in it. Annie Mumolo, who co-wrote Bridesmaids with Kristen Wiig, was in it. Who else? Larry was in it, but Larry hasn't gone on to anything famous. Larry Dorff.
The great Larry Dorff.
Yeah. He did, but he did the thing where he dressed as a woman in a talk show for you guys.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
How was that? Terrible or funny?
It had some funny parts to it. It was peculiar.
Yeah.
It was,
I auditioned for that.
You did?
Yeah. And I went in with two other people, and it felt like one of those auditions, like commercial auditions are like this.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, you know, just weird people off the street. You're in a room with suddenly you're going to improvise with them, and you can just tell they are so desperate to talk that you, a normal human, will just give up and just sink inside themselves. Yes. Which I did. I gave up.
They were. They had some hot takes, and they were fighting to express them.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yappy Broads.
Uh-huh.
That had some good people in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tommy Blacha, Earthquake.
Uh huh. Didn't Tommy do something on Young Person's Guide? Did he play something?
I feel like he
came out and he did one thing.
Tim and Eric popped through that show.
Seth Green did a bit on it.
Seth. Yeah. Did he wipe the booger on the curtain?
Oh, maybe.
I feel like that.
Maybe.
That show was fraught with peril.
Yeah.
But you know what came out of that also was Dave Willis did a test mm-hmm. for a young person's or
for
Your Pretty Face is Going to Hell.
Yeah.
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 So it was a real incubator.
Uh huh. Yeah, there were a lot of great ideas. They just didn't coalesce.
Mm-hmm.
Not for Young Person's
Ahead
Guide.
Ahead of its time.
And a good title, Young Person's Guide to History.
Yeah.
We didn't do much with it, though. Yeah, we set the network back a bit there.
You think so?
I think. Yeah. I think.
So that went away.
I feel a little responsible.
And what happened?
Peter Girardi, licking his wounds, took a job as a... chastened. He took a job at Warner Brothers Animation where he works as a executive.
Yeah.
Then Peter hired me to come in and do a brainstorming session about what to do with the Looney Tunes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like me and Steve Little and some of those old crew. Oh, yeah. Steve was in Young Person's Guide.
Yes.
And we said the only thought I really had at the time was, well, I've written all these sketches for both Robot Chicken and Groundlings. I'm sitting on a treasure trove of written material, not treasure at all. But I thought what we should do with the Looney Tunes is pitch it as like a version of the Muppet Show. So it's like a sketch show, and then make like the Muppet or whatever the fuck they're called, the Looney Tunes, do the same thing like Kermit used to do. Like Bugs could put on a hat and be a newsman or something. Whatever. I don't know what the idea was. And then, so we started down that road. They loved it. We started down that road.
Who loved it?
There was Sam and Peter, I think.
Warner Brothers. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay. But then crucially, someone higher up at Warner Brothers swooped in, Peter Roth, and he was like, this is not the Bugs Bunny I know. And it was all, then we had to start over. But then the great thing about it was we ended up writing a sitcom, basically, with Bugs and Daffy living in a house together. It was a very, like, the odd couple.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very, very fun to write. Kristen Wiig played Lola Bunny. Fred Armisen played Speedy Gonzalez. We got some of our funny friends to be on it.
Did you feel a responsibility messing around with Bugs Bunny and Daffy
no.
Duck?
No, I didn't give
you
a
didn't
shit
care.
About that. Because it's like they had already done, people had already ruined it. That's what they always say. They're like these are the crown jewels.
Uh-huh.
But guess what Warner Brothers does with the crown jewels? They have parking signs in their parking garages with like Bugs Bunny wearing a hard hat, pointing and saying, "Sorry for our dust, Doc." It's like they've already fucking ruined him. The poor bastard is being ruined every day. So we weren't going to ruin it.
Yeah.
The great cartoons exist. Go
there
watch
was no
them.
Solemnity
no, no.
to that.
No.
So you
So that was fun. We wrote two seasons of a half-hour sitcom. And really, basically,
what was that called?
It was called The Looney Tunes Show. Unmemorable title.
Huh.
But it basically was a great writing testing ground. Because, like, you know, if you write in the real world of comedy, live action, you're not going to write so many scripts. You're going to be on a staff. You're going to write like maybe one a season. You're punching up. You're sitting in a room all day. For this, we got to write 50 episodes by ourselves. And it was huge, the amount of volume that we wrote. And then
50 episodes.
50, yeah,
50 half-hour, 20-minute episodes.
Yeah. It was two seasons. It was technically 52, but for some reason we quit right before the end. Oh, because maybe Mike Tyson had come along, and they wanted us on that. And Warner Brothers was like, we're done with the Looney Tunes show. The kids don't like it. And mm-hmm. made, the kids couldn't. They would never like it.
Made them cry.
We wrote it. It was such an adult show. We just had Bugs and Daffy sitting in coffee shops. But, like, we wrote it just to amuse ourselves, sadly. But it was still a great experience. And then I think it could have done better if it had a laugh track. It needed to tell the kids what was funny.
Mm.
The kids can't figure that out on their own.
Oh, they're kids.
Yeah. So it's like, but when they watch those Disney live action nightmares, those horrible things, they have a fake laugh thing going all the time.
Do they?
Yeah. So it's like they need to know. Otherwise, they think Daffy Duck is mean. They didn't know they could laugh at him.
Yeah, he is mean.
Yeah, it's true. He is mean.
So you're sitting there
at Warner Brothers.
At Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
Are you in an office and the phone
yes.
rings?
No. Sam or Peter comes in, and Peter was he was given a mandate to start going down the path of trying to get into adult comedy for Warner Brothers. And then he comes in the office. He's like, we have this thing with Mike Tyson. And so they already had a sizzle reel, which was Mike Tyson. Andrew Dice Clay, I believe, was in it. and maybe it was like some old Hanna-Barbera characters would pop up. So, and then I was like, you know, Mike Tyson had appeared in The Hangover, which I thought, that looked very funny to me. I didn't see that. I'm one of the few people who haven't seen The Hangover. Mm. But like, he at least, that looked like good use of Mike Tyson. But by the time we were going to use it, I was like, this is lame. It's like, it didn't seem funny to me. And so I was all ready to tell Peter no. And I did. And then, because that was like the first time in my life I turned down a job. And then Peter goes, please. And then I say yes.
Wow.
I was a real pushover.
Yeah, that was easy.
Yes. But then it became fun because I wrote like five outlines for the first five episodes. Again, just like thinking, this is what I would do to make this funny. If you like it, great. If you don't like it, I don't care. I'm gone. And then Lazo liked it. He must have seen the outlines, and he liked it. We went into production, and then it became super fun to work on once we got the cast in place, and it really is very fun to work on. And I find it very funny. I mean, it's like it has Norm MacDonald in it. Who wouldn't laugh at Norm MacDonald? You'd have to be crazy.
Yeah. So you wrote some outlines. Lazo liked it. You started writing scripts.
Yeah. And then I guess we'd probably written like five scripts before that fateful encounter with Mike Tyson at his house at 5 a.m. I'd never, because we weren't recording any of them yet. We were just writing maybe proof of concept kind of stuff.
Wrote half a dozen scripts or
Yeah, yeah. I think that's right. And then it was time, like, okay, well, now we can really do this. Let's record them.
So you got news that it had been ordered?
Yes.
And then you have to go record Mike at his house in Vegas.
Yeah. That was the shocker. But then from then on, it became fun. And I love Mike Tyson. I would be one of those people. If Mike Tyson, you know, goes crazy.
Yeah.
And he, like, King Kong murders a bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
And takes, you know, goes crazy with his fists.
Right.
Full of unbridled anger, like the Hulk. If that happens, I would be one of those dopes on the local news saying, that's not the Mike I know.
What is it about him that
I don't
you like?
Know. He seems like so not like an athlete. Like, I feel like you think of these ex-professional athletes and they want to still be, and I don't know that many. I feel like I just seeing interviews, they look like they still expect and want you to think they're still that athlete.
Yeah.
And there's something about Mike Tyson that seems like no part of him identifies with being a boxer or an athlete. He just seems like this person, and he has kind of a fun affect about him. It's like he makes no sense to me. He comes off nerdy and nice and sweet, and he's kind of sensitive while at the same time being very insensitive. Like, he doesn't notice shit. But like he says thank you to people in the gentlest way. He'll take a picture with anyone. He's just like, he seems like, I don't know, like he had a transformation.
How does that square with his general perception, with his history?
I don't know. You know, it's like you walk around with him, like the few times I've been around. Oh, one time we were at New York Comic Con, and it seemed like a fight almost happened with the guys from would it have been the Boondocks? Is there a guy, Michael Jai White?
Yeah.
He's like a big fighting guy, right?
I'm not sure.
I think he is. I think he's like a, whatever you call it, mixed martial arts.
Uh-huh.
And he's an actor.
Uh-huh.
And crucially, he seems to have portrayed Mike Tyson in the Mike Tyson unauthorized story that aired on like ABC in like late 80s.
Oh, no.
So we're all walking down a hallway, the Mike Tyson crew and the Boondocks crew, whatever's walking the other fucking way. And it was like, it seemed like the Sharks and the Jets, except who cares about the rest of the fucking cartoon nerds on either team? It's just this one big guy and then Mike Tyson. And then it got so weird. And the guy Tommy Davidson, the comedian, was on Boondocks. He seemed to try to diffuse it. He did the comedian's role. He was like, you know, let's make it funny. Let's take down the temperature. And then he was trying that, and that did not work at all. And I feel like at one point Mike Tyson sort of gently moved him to the side, and it was like a chest-to-chest shit. And then my wife, Rachel, at the time was like, oh, she was wanting to, I was like, we got to get the fuck out of here. We're all going to be beaten to a pulp.
And then, just a tornado of
violence. Yeah, like you don't know how bad this is about to get. And then like somehow Mike, I don't know what happened. You could barely hear them.
He was
Tyson
angry.
Walked on.
He was angry.
I think he was angry.
That this guy had portrayed him in a negative light?
Yeah. And then I think this guy was like tough too, didn't want to back down. It was like probably it wasn't this guy's fault. So it's like, you know, just one of those things.
So what happened?
Kind of nothing.
Nothing.
But it was a lot of hearts racing.
Yeah.
You know.
You thought that maybe
this was going to be
there could be a snap of some sort.
Yeah. Our show was going to end here and there, right in the moment.
Wow.
And that was before it had aired.
And you moved on down the hall.
Yeah.
Wow.
We went on down the hall.
How has the perception of the show been? Have people been responsive to it?
You know, it's funny. It's like all Adult Swim shows. I'm old enough that I don't know any person that barely even knows what Adult Swim is. So you know what? It's like a younger audience. Mm-hmm. So young people, I'm sure, love it. I don't mix with any of those people, so I don't know.
You don't mix with them?
No. I'm our age and older.
Do young people know Mike Tyson?
I think they don't. I think they don't. I think, if anything, they just think he's like a character on a show now. I don't think any of them know about
boxing.
They
know him from the show.
Yeah, or they probably get him confused with George Foreman. I don't think there's any real, you know, sense of who he was.
He's just a character now.
Yeah, he's a toothless lion. That's what he called himself. He was like, because we were trying to get Evander Holyfield for one thing.
Uh-huh.
And Evander Holyfield was like holding out for like $1 million or something because he thought like to do a voice, he should be paid like a boxing match. And then it was like, you know, Evander. And then Mike Tyson was actually being very funny about it. He was like, I told Evander, we're old lions, man. We don't got our teeth anymore. We got to just live our lives, man. And then, but then Mike was like laughing. He's like, all these old boxers, they always want a lot of money. And then the deal never happened. So we didn't write a thing with Evander Holyfield, which was just as well, because no one in the audience gives a shit about Evander Holyfield.
How about Norm?
Norm's the funniest person. I think he's the funniest person on earth, but I thought that when I was, you know, younger.
Norm MacDonald. How did he come into the show?
He just, you know, weirdly, Peter Girardi had worked with some of the people Norm mixes with, particularly the guy who played Saul in Saul the Mole Man, Josh Gardner. Josh Gardner, who I happen to know, because he's the first cousin of another groundling guy of my era, Nat Faxon. And Nat Faxon and Jim Rash are writing partners. They were like Oscar winners. They won an Oscar for The Descendants. But they're both very sketch comedy kind of guys. And Jim Rash at that point had become also the dean on Community and then was on our show. But Josh Gardner, who's Nat's first cousin, was Norm's opener on many tours for stand-up. So there was this connection to Josh, to Norm through Josh, that Peter, when he called and just we offered him the role of Pigeon, I think he was receptive and that he otherwise might not have been. Because of that little bit of familiarity with Peter.
A little bit of shorthand.
Yeah. And then he came in, and my God, he did the funniest thing the first time. Norm did not want to do his normal voice on the show. And so he came in, and he did a thing that was making me laugh so hard. But that's a problem if you think someone's so funny. Everything you do, you think is you think is funny. But he was basically doing his impression of Sterling Hayden, the guy in the general in Dr. Strangelove.
Mm-hmm.
So Norm doesn't sound like Norm for the first like three pages of the script. And Peter Girardi, the executive at Warner Brothers, gets this ashen look on his face like, we've hired Norm MacDonald to be Norm MacDonald. No one's going to know what this fucking thing is. It's like an impression of a guy from 1960. But I was laughing so hard because it was just like so funny. And then it was my job to tell Norm that we didn't want that. And it was terrible. I was so, like, embarrassed. Oh, my God, even more, Norm brought his mother to the record. Now, Norm has got to be... So the mother's like a grandmother-type aged person. She's a little old lady, very sweet. She's in the voice booth. He comes in. I'm like, oh, my God, this is Norm MacDonald. This is going to be so great. He begins reading the first bit of dialogue, and he's doing it in a voice that doesn't sound anything like Norm MacDonald.
Why was that choice made, do you think?
His own creative juices. And you know what's funny is it's like he was right. It was very funny.
Do you think he didn't want to be Norm MacDonald
in
the show?
Probably. I think he like, I think he's got like a, and I get it, because then it's like, you know, if he's Norm Macdonald and he writes his own material, whatever, he's in charge of his career. If he sounds like Norm Macdonald and he makes a joke and I've written the joke and the joke sucks, it's embarrassing for Norm Macdonald. Everyone's like, Norm Macdonald's not funny anymore.
So he's going to do the cartoon, but he's going to do it in a funny voice that no one will recognize.
Right.
Preserve some
and
anonymity.
I'm telling you, you would have laughed hard at this performance of his, because it was something, it was also correct. It was a great choice.
Do you have it?
I bet we must, unless they unless like all things, they pressed erase. I don't know. But it was like, but also I get that the audience wouldn't have gotten it.
So you are learning this of this decision in real time in
yes.
the studio with Norm and his mom and
yes.
Peter.
Yes. And then Peter's like saying, okay, let's sit. Like, we did one script and Peter's like, let's take a break. And then I just said it. I said, I blamed the network. And I said, is this all right, Peter, if we just say? And then I said, I kept saying they. And I'm like, they want you to be Norm. They really do.
And how did that go over?
he was like, yeah. Okay. He seemed like a person who's like, I've heard this same line. Fuck it. The dumb corporation is wrong, but I'll do it. Whatever. And he just did it. And then he was super funny. And he was great. But he would have been super funny doing the other thing too. Just no one would have understood what it was.
Yeah. Has having had Norm Macdonald on the show, do you think that attracted a bigger audience?
I don't know. I bet a little bit. I know Norm's got his core audience. I feel like he might have a slightly skewing older audience that might be think that when they look at an Adult Swim show, their guard is up so high and they just go, this is weird and it's not for me.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't like take the time to go, oh, it's not that weird. You know, because it's Mike Tyson Mysteries is not that weird. It's not that avant-garde. It's like they get a mystery and then there's Joe. It's like it's not that hard to follow.
Did he end up improvising, changing the lines?
He every once in a while, he's super smart and very well read. And every once in a while, Norm will do something that's can be embarrassing, where he'll say, the grammar's not right here, or you've got the tenses sort of, what's your, and those become embarrassing to me. Like he thinks the jokes are funny. Yeah, I blame the network. He thinks the jokes are funny, and I think he genuinely thinks the show is funny.
So there's a little bit of anxiety that Norm, you want Norm to like it.
Yeah, I think so, for sure.
How about Mike?
Mike, the only time, Mike, he loves that people tell him the show is great.
Does he watch it?
I doubt it. I bet he watches every once in a while. He thinks, Mike will think things are funny if his character gets mad. He likes that. He loves saying motherfucker. And he loves getting angry. It's like, and he's good at it, as you can imagine. But like his acting transitioning from like a kind of laughing or saying a line and then getting angry. And by the way, I still always find it funny because I think it kind of can happen in real life with him. Like he's very impulsive. Sorry. He's very impulsive. So like if Mike just wants something, he just grabs it, or he doesn't think about the consequences. It doesn't appear to me. He's not governed by the laws of physics as we are. He just moves through the universe on his own thing.
Have you ever felt threatened by him?
One time I've never felt threatened, but one time I felt like he was mad. And I know one time he did not like a joke, which was we did a sort of semi-parody, a gentle parody of those Real Housewives shows. And ours was the mystery was, why did one set of housewife and her husband not get invited to some charity ball? And it was set in Newport Beach, so it was among rich people. And then we basically formatted our show like one of those shows. So it was like you met the four real bitches of Newport Beach, we called it. And then just apropos of nothing, we had Mike also do one of those things where he goes, I'm Mike Tyson. I solve mysteries. I'm known for two things. I solve mysteries and I'm a bitch. Or something, because every woman kept saying that was their joke, like, and I'm a bitch. Like every beach city needs a bitch, and I'm that bitch. So they kept having these jokes. So Mike needed to do it too. And he had an incredible reluctance to say, I'm a bitch. And I think it carried great that carried great significance in prison life, where he had done that, and he did not want to say that. And he did it, and he kind of swallowed the line. I was like, Mike, it'll be funny. Just do it. And he did it, but he didn't do it with zest.
Did you keep it?
We did, yeah. And it works because it's like in a packaged thing.
Yeah.
But he didn't lean into it, as they say these days.
That had to have been an uncomfortable
assignment. That one was. And then one time he became mad talking about Don King.
What got him mad?
I think he has strong negative feelings about Don King, or did at the time. I think he might have had a rapprochement with him since then. But I think at the time, he was like, he was telling some story. Don King came up, and he started talking about what a motherfucker he is, and like kind of got real mad. And it seemed real, his anger.
Is he healthy? Is he in good shape?
He vacillates enormously. It's so funny because sometimes I'll think like, oh, my God, he's gained a lot of weight and he's old. And then the last time I saw him, he seemed thin – or not thin, but like in shape and totally with it and like a young guy. So he goes – he's always riding waves.
Has he ever punched you?
One time in my excitement – this is early on. I don't know what the fuck my brain was thinking. I was excited. We had just finished. He came out of the booth. And for some reason, I kind of got my arms moving in this way with my fists clenched like a kid, like with excitement. And I found myself kind of like punching him on the arm for no reason, like out of excitement. Like I should have just hugged him. And instead, like I did the one thing you should never do. And then he immediately got himself into a boxing position. And then he didn't do anything, but I was like, oh, my God, what have I done? Like, it's the last thing you should do to that dude. And his body is – he has the craziest body I've ever seen up close. Like, his – I don't know why I know this. Maybe because we had to get him shoes once for the live action stuff. He has a size 15 and a half foot. Now, he's not taller than me, but that's a big foot.
Yeah.
And then – his hands, the fingers are not that long, but the meat part of the hand, this part is double my hand. It's like crazy looking, and it looks crazy, and when you shake it, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Then the other thing that's crazy is the distance from his, I would say from his chest to his back. Like a lot of people like have broad shoulders, mm-hmm. but they're not like broad also.
Like a cube.
Yes. And then that's when it dawns on you, like he would be like one time I thought, like he was a little mad and I thought, if he went crazy, what would I do? Is there a weapon? What would be the thing?
Yeah.
If he wanted to get me, I have one shot.
It's like what thinking, would it be?
I was thinking and I was like, do you try to strike the head with a big heavy metal thing? And just looking at him, he looks impossible to stop. I think you would, I don't know what you'd do. I think you got to just play dead.
Yeah. Drop to the ground and wait to be counted out.
Yeah, maybe his eyes don't see movement if you just... Because, like, he doesn't look like he cares.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think he'd be filled with anger. Like, he wouldn't want to beat me up for that reason, but he might just be in berserker mode. And then maybe if you just went... if you stayed still, he'd just pass you.
It's an unlikely circumstance for a cartoon.
Yes, yeah. But I think it gives it that... you know what's funny? It's because I always think like that... I always want that to be a little bit in our show, like the feeling, oh, he's so gentle and he's nice and he's the hero of the show or whatever, he's the nice dad. But then just a little bit, like, shit, he could go crazy and kill us all. Like, everyone should remember that.
Secret sauce.
Yeah, so we put in a little burst of anger we'll throw in every once in a while just to keep you like, whoa.
Can look for those.
Yeah.
Where are you in the status? Where's that show now?
Mike Tyson is... we are in post on our fourth season.
Wow. So how many episodes is that? Four coming up on 40?
I think 60.
60?
Isn't that crazy?
Holy cow.
Yeah.
60 episodes.
Uh-huh. It might be 50. It's some. Yeah, maybe it's 50. Maybe we did 10 the first season and then 20.
A lot of shows don't go that long.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very – especially because I thought this show would go one.
One episode?
Yeah.
One season?
Mm-hmm. I thought I would have bet the house on Young Person's Guide to History and giving you $0 place on Mike Tyson's
history. Never know.
Yeah, yeah. It's very true.
So you're an actor also.
Yes. Yeah.
Reno 911, Arrested Development, Will and Grace.
Yes.
Nobodies.
Nobodies. The show nobody watched.
Larry Dorff.
Yeah.
So you guys ended up being writing partners?
Yeah, Larry was in Groundlings with me, same with Rachel, and we... And
you
then
three.
That, the three of us were working on all these Warner Brothers things like Looney Tunes and Rachel and Larry write on Mike Tyson. It's me, Rachel, Larry basically writing all the episodes.
Mm-hmm. So your experience on the fringes of kids television informed Nobodies.
Yeah. And then we shot two seasons of that.
So what's it like being funny out in Hollywood these days? Is it relaxing? Is it stressful?
I think the one thing I didn't think about as a career in the comedy side, I did not think this part through. One, I think there's a lot less money in it than my fantasies, and maybe also that changed over time with all these channels. But it's like, why else would I have had a television show? Like, you know, it all got – there's so many choices now. Of course, it's all less money. But then the other thing that I didn't think about is when you become an adult – like, it's just hard. Jobs are hard, and then you have your life, and then you go to your job, and your job is supposed to be laughing all day, but then maybe a bunch of things went terrible in your life. It's twice – like, now I think I should have been dramatic, and if I was writing on, you know, SVU, Law and Order, and it's all about, you know, some horrible thing with a kid that got murdered, then when your life goes bad, you come to work, it's fine. You write a thing about a kid that got murdered, but then you don't have to like pretend to be laughing. So that's like I think my advice would be, get into drama. You know, like, why comedy? It's too hard to keep laughing.
Have you done voices?
I do voices occasionally for these guys. Mm-hmm. I played a hairdresser on one of the Robot Chicken sketches. I mean the Star Wars ones. But then like the one I thought, oh, this is definitely I should do this one. They gave it to Seth MacFarlane.
Oh.
And I was like, does he not have enough bullshit to do? Who cares? Come on. I wrote it.
You don't get to cast it.
No, but it was like, come on. I would have been fine. I would have been no different. There'd have been no drop off. I'm telling you. Seth MacFarlane.
Hugh Davidson.
Yes.
Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Be sure to visit adultswim.com/podcast for the links to some of the things Hugh and I were just talking about. And send us an email if you want to, adultswimpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks to Dave Bonowitz and Christina Loringer for editing and producing these podcasts. Thanks to Maggie Cannon for her help organizing all this. And the good people at Stupid Buddies for having me. And thank you for listening.